Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show. Somebody's throwing a party. Guess what? I'm throwing another party, y'all, and this one is happening on Halloween. So you bring your costumes, you bring your kids, you bring your joy, and we are going to meet at Sugar Mouse in NYC. That's on the Lower East Side from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 25th. That is the Saturday before Halloween, and it's also after your children's nap time, so everyone can come. There will be games. There might be a little costume party catwalk. There are drinks for the adults, of course. And I will be there with my family. So I hope you all show up. The info's in the show notes. And click the link to RSVP. And I'll see you there. Let's go. Let's have a little fun. We deserve it. We really do. This episode is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I think like what is hurt in groups can be healed in groups, and your first group is your family. And so group therapy is a really unique way of being able to, especially in a communal type of trauma, like which religion tends to be, group therapy is a really cool way to heal it in a safer, gentler way that utilizes the same like communal aspect in the healing. Because one of the biggest things people say when trying to untangle religion or possibly leave religion or whatever they want to do about it is like, well, that's my whole community. Everyone I know is at that church. Like, what, I won't have anybody kind of thing. So
right.
I really like helping people, you know, find chosen family and find community and what that looks like, no matter what they believe. And I'm not anti-religion. A lot of people think that if I'm a religious trauma specialist, I must hate religion. And I don't. Like, I just hate trauma.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie, I'm your gay host. And this is the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families and all of our fabulous identities. And this episode I have coming up for you, this interview, is a really wonderful one. I got to talk with S.C. Neely. S.C. Neely came from a cult upbringing, basically, to living as chosen family one block apart. SC shows us how queerness, co-parenting, and healing can all coexist, even through a medical crisis and messy beginnings. It's actually a really wonderful conversation. So that's going to be coming up shortly. But before I do that, I have a special friend who wants to come in and share something with us. My good friend, Teek Milan, who's been on many episodes, but Teek is back to share some really cool stuff with us. And I'm going to bring Teek in first to share what's going on in Teek's life, and then SC. Okay, here we go. Here comes Teek. Hi, Teek.
Hi, Jamie.
Teek Milan, everybody. Teek, my good pal, Teek is back. You've been on this show multiple times,
Teek. I have. I love this show.
I love you.
I love you, too.
I love you, and I'm so happy to have you back. I'm so happy to catch up with you.
Well, you know, since we last spoke, I've moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, my God. You're in my home state.
Oh, you're from California. That's right.
I am.
Northern?
Northern. And we are very separate. Very separate.
Yeah. Yes. Northern California is beautiful, too. But so I moved out here in February. So it's been quite a few months. And, you know, just trying to find my footing. And, you know, I've had such a a strong impact in New York City and on the East Coast. I really want to be able to have that same impact out here. But that's not why I moved. I moved for a bunch of reasons. But while I'm here, you know, I want to make sure that I have that impact and just trying to build some community out here on the West Coast, on the left coast, and see, you know, what it's like to be queer out here, you know, under the sun, you know. So it's
been under the sun. It's a rainy day here in New York. So
here too. It's like flooding. It's awful. I think it's like, it's pretty bad.
Wow, we're living through some crazy times. For the listeners at home who might be newer to the show, but if you don't know who Teek is, you need to go back because Teek's been in like 3 or 4 episodes. Teek, can you give kind of your like elevator pitch of like who you are and why you have come back numerous times onto this here show?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Teek and I'm an educator, I'm a writer, I'm an advocate, I'm an activist, I'm a storyteller. And those are kind of the things that I do. And I do all of those things, you know, for the advancement and for the visibility of queer people, of queer and trans people all over the world. So I'm back on the show to talk about some of the work that I'm doing and some of my new offerings that I have in the world. Because, you know, because the world is the world is a hellscape.
It's a hellscape. And I just said earlier to Teek, girl, and that's all we needed to say.
This girl, what is going on?
We are living through the Handmaid's Tale.
We're living through the Handmaid's Tale, right? And so this is how it's landing on me. So first, as a person who's done a lot of DEI work and a lot of work around visibility and storytelling around LGBTQ people, what I have found professionally is a lot of those opportunities have disappeared this year. Mm-hmm. Like the majority of these opportunities. And the thing is, it's so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking because these like corporations and organizations and individuals and politicians who you thought were in allyship, who you thought who had your back, they were there to protect you, to fill in the gaps, they're gone.
They're gone.
Just like that, just gone. Mm-hmm. It's cowardice. And that one thing I can't stand is a coward. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it feels like, this cultural cowardice when it comes to queer and trans people. And that so much of it was performative. So I was like, now what can I do? As a leader in community and as a person who, you know, has been here and has a network, how can I try to stand in the gaps?
And you have also worked really hard to break the stigma of toxic masculinity, you know, as a trans man. Like, you have such beautiful insights into just identity and masculinity in general. And I love it. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted, but.
No. Thank you for that. And that's another part of it too. Like, just trying to have these conversations around what does it mean to create an organic masculinity? What does it mean? What are telling the story of a transgender person, a Black trans person, this is full of love. Like, I have a family who loves me. I have a community that loves me. There's been these, you know, times when it's been hard, but my story is not centered around the resilience or the heartbreak, right? And so being able to tell these stories and being able to share this has been really important. And so now that these opportunities have been taken away from me and from a lot of us, now it's like you got to create these opportunities for yourself, right?
Yeah. And how do we do that?
And I think it's for all like the queer and trans and LGBTQ people who are listening. We have to make space for ourselves. We really do. And the thing is we all can be space makers for each other. We all can create safe space. So it's like it's the space that we create and it's the space that we create that we take up. And so now I'm like, how do I continue to create safe space and supporting space for other people? And so I was talking to a couple of friends. Can I just say, so me and my friends are therapists. Like 3 of my best friends are therapists.
I'm telling you, it's like because we know we need the therapy. And the person, the interview coming up is also a therapist.
I'm a therapist. I'll call my friends. I'm like, therapy me, please. Totally. Please therapy me right now.
Totally.
But we're having this conversation and I'm talking to them like I'm talking to you. And they were like, you should do gender doula. And I was like, what is that even? And so this idea of doula is someone who was there with you during the transitions, right? So you have, you know, the birth doulas bringing people to the world. You have death doulas. But what about in the middle, you know, when we have people who are transitioning? And so this idea of being a gender doula is just that, is being able to stand with somebody during that transition, give them that support, give them those resources in a way that's not necessarily in a clinical way, but feels like softer and more like humanly connected. And so that's what I'm doing now. And so working with parents of trans kids, working with trans kids, and even working with older adults who are transitioning. So what does it mean to transition, not just medically and legally, but socially? How do we do that? How do we support our children in that? Because I think what's really important for our allies to understand is that when we transition, you all transition with us, you know? And I've talked about this before. Like, what does it look like for your son to now be your daughter? What does that mean for you as a parent?
Yeah.
Are you redefining yourself? Are you having to rethink these things? And so for me, I want to come in and be able to hold people's hands on that journey.
Yes. And I think a lot of times the parents, us parents, we kind of, we'll put that on the back burner, you know, because our kids come first, especially those of us who are accepting and loving and like with our children on these transitions. From many of the people I've spoken to, they kind of put their experience of it on the back burner to help get their child through it. So the idea of having somebody like you kind of hold their hand too and let them know it's okay, you know, to feel the way you feel and I'm here for you and here's some tools. I think that's really awesome. And for the kids too.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's going to be some pain points there in the transition. And you know, and it's a good point you made because we have parents who are very accepting of their children, but then what's happened is sometimes they can overdo it. Right. So I was working with these moms and they're like, oh, you know, my kid's trans, it's great. And they were just going over the top, right? They're, you know, they're buying the kids dresses and they're doing this. And it's like, that's fine. But the child, that's not what the child wanted. So, you know, there's a place where you have to let your child lead. You can be really enthusiastic about having a queer kid because you're a queer parent or having a trans kid because you're a trans parent. But at the same time, it's letting your kid is going to tell you who they are. And then our job is to tell them how to be in this world. So just like relax, let this kid go through the non-binary phase of it. Let this kid explore who they are without trying to, you know, take it over because you are so accepting and because you are so loving. So like it comes from a good place, but sometimes what I've experienced is sometimes there are some parents that can get a little too involved.
I mean, that would be me 100%. Like my kids are so far, nobody has come out as anything, right? They're still young. But like, yeah, that would totally be me. Like if my kid were to come and say, Ma, I'm gay, I'd be like, yes, queen, let's go. Like I would be too much. I would be over the top. And so it is, you know, it's great to have just someone with a perspective who looks at it holistically and who's been on the other side of it, who's been through it to walk. We all need a guide. I want you to just come with me everywhere.
I will.
And just not even about the gay stuff. Like, I just want you to like be there so I could be like, Teek, how do I manage this conversation right now? Like,
no, seriously. I think we do. We all need like shepherds and guides and mentors in this life and like coaches in this life. I think that word coaching has kind of been like just beaten to the ground.
I agree.
But, you know what I'm saying? But I think that there's something to it, particularly now where we are seeing the erosion of systems. We're seeing divisions in our communities, in our country. We have to depend on each other. And so this is my way of allowing some space for people to have some dependence on me. And I have dependence on other people. Like I have shepherds and guides and mentors in my life because we are all we have, really. We really.
And I love the point you made where, you know, the systems have failed us. They're done. It was performative. Mm-hmm. And it really is up to us to make the spaces and make the change and be the people that we need right now. Nobody's coming to help us. Nobody's doing it for us.
No one's coming to save you. We're all doing our part. Like you having this podcast, this is you doing your part, having this platform, having these conversations, letting people know you're a part of community, that you're not alone, that, you know, your story is unique and your story is a part of our story. You know, this is really important. All the work that you're doing, that I'm doing, the listeners, how we show up for each other is just so paramount. It's so, so important right now.
I agree.
And this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show up and help families, help kids, help my trans folks just feel more human and more full and loved in this world because we deserve it. We absolutely deserve it.
And I'm so glad to be able to highlight what you're doing. And I'm sure people at home are, it's resonating. And, you know, we realize we need to be the change and we realize nobody's doing it for us. And there is a lot of catharsis happening from it. Like I feel frozen so much.
Me too.
You know, and I spoke with someone recently and I want to get to how people can contact you. And I know you have a busy day, so you have to go. But like, I spoke to somebody recently. She was older. She must have been like late 60s and she had just transitioned or early 70s even. She had just started her transition when Trump came into office the second time and made that speech the first day about how there's only two genders and we will henceforth recognize that. And she told me in her mind, she said, I can turn it around right now. I don't have to do this. It's early enough. I can turn it around. I don't have to do this. I can live in the world the way I've been living. Mm-hmm. And she didn't. But I said to her, I wonder how many people actually did.
Yeah.
Because of that one state. And now it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So the need for support is extremely urgent right now.
Yeah, for sure. Because so many people are scared. That's a fear response. So many folks are scared. I know trans people who are low and no disclosure and who are, you know, particularly like trans men who thought about like coming out and they're like, oh, I can't do that now. You know, these like roughneck kind of guys who, you know, who no one knows in their life. And it's like, you're putting yourself in danger. But the thing is, we can't operating from fear. It's never helpful.
Right.
It's never helpful. You know, say right now, I think I'm not necessarily scared, but I'm mad. Like I'm pissed. Mm. I'm so angry. Mm. I'm so, so angry about what's going on.
It's like unbelievable. The things that are happening right now. It's like this world is upside down, topsy turvy. We're in this weird. Yep. Nothing is what it was. Everything is upside down.
Yep.
People are allowed to say the craziest are encouraged to say the craziest stuff. It's just insane.
Yep. And it's not ever going to go back. That's the thing. So this idea that we're going to go back to the before times, we have to get rid of that idea and not work through fear and then figure out how we can be here for each other. It's a new day. It's a new day. Yeah. It's really about creating the support and the scaffolding for one another. Seriously.
And they're doing their best to put the fear in us. They're doing their best and they're doing a good job, but we have to fight it with love and queer joy and resources. So Teek, tell everybody where they can find you, where they can get support from you and all of the things. And if anybody wants to book you at their organization,
sure can.
Feel free to reach out.
Please. Thank you, Jamie. Yes, teekmilan.com, T-I-Q-M-I-L-A-N, like the city, teekmilan.com. You could go there, just fill out the contact sheet. It comes directly to me if you have any questions about my offerings. I'm doing gender doula work. I have a resonant voice, which is a public speaking course, which is also, I think, is really important to you right now. It's so important for us to take up space, be able to clearly and concisely be able to tell our stories, to share our knowledge, and be a part of the change that we want to see. And it starts with our voice. It's one of the most important things that we have. Also, gender doula, helping people through their transitions. And also, people just want to talk, like I'm here. So go to teekmilan.com. You can see everything that I'm doing there. Fill out the contact sheet. It comes directly to me, and then I will be in touch with you.
Teek is a diamond, a gem. And I feel so honored and privileged to even know you and to be able to text with you. You're like a celebrity.
I appreciate you so much. I really do.
I adore you. So everybody reach out to Teek and just know there's help out there. We're building community. We are here for each other. Yeah. So I love it. I love it. I love it. Reach out to Teek and everybody enjoy the episode with SC Neely. It's a good one. It's going to give you the feels like they always do. I'm going to ask Helen and Beulah, my fake assistants, because I still don't have any.
Helen and Teek. Beulah, that's right.
I forgot about that. Helen and Beulah are going to have to roll this tape for us. Would you like to ask Helen and Beulah to roll the tape? Can you do me the honors?
Helen and Beulah, go ahead and roll that tape.
Perfect. Okay, I love it. Okay. Oh my God, so good.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Essie.
Hey.
Nice to have you here virtually. How are you today?
I am doing okay, for sure. It's been an interesting week.
Usually is nowadays, huh? Like little fires everywhere.
Yes, that is definitely the motto of my life right now.
Yeah, I think it's the motto of many of our lives right now. Where are you coming in from?
I'm in outside of Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay, yeah, so you're in a police state right now.
Yeah, big fires here.
So. Big fires, lots of fires. Okay, well, let's just get right into it. Who you are and why you're here. So we're going to do your 30-second elevator pitch. Here we go. On your mark, get set, go.
I'm SC Neely. I go by SC. My pronouns are they, she, with a preference for they. And I have two children, ages 5 and 2, both girls right now. And I co-parent with their father, who is a really close friend of mine. We live a block apart. And we have just kind of created our own like queer family together in our own unique way. And that's kind of, that's us.
Amazing. You did it. You made it in. And you're also a therapist, right?
Yeah.
So we'll dig into that too. But let's get started. So did you say the father is, were you ever romantically involved? Like, what's the story? I want to know the whole story.
We were romantically involved-ish in a way. I grew up in an evangelical cult, and religion was a really big part of my life and my like being closeted for a very long time. So like we were romantically connected, but in a way of like, I didn't feel able to be out yet. You know?
Right. Gotcha.
So we were always really close friends, and I mostly identify as pansexual, but I lean more like a lesbian. I was always honest with him about that from day one. We met at the end of 2018. I had told him about like, you know, my confusion around sexuality and all of those things. And, you know, he has his own journey that he's exploring for himself in that. And, you know, I won't share his stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we just both really were at a point in our life where we wanted a family, and we didn't necessarily see that happening in other ways or wanted in other ways right now. I didn't want the traditional thing that I had been kind of forced into and seen. So we were like, let's get pregnant. Let's have a baby and get pregnant. I want to have a kid. And so we did. Luckily, first try, everything good to go. I know. And then during that pregnancy, my father, my family said, you know, if this baby is born out of wedlock, we won't love it.
Oh.
And yeah. And so we did get married.
Oh, wow.
I felt like I didn't want my parent, my child to lose my parents or my their grandparents. I have since have different thoughts on that now. But at the time, I was like, okay, well, if all they need is this piece of paper to like love their grandkids, I will do that. And so we did get married. That paper didn't really actually help my family at all, though. So,
oh, like as in with acceptance, you mean?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, so you did that for them and then it still didn't like.
Still didn't work. Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Excuse my French. I'm sure that wasn't allowed to be said in your house. Wait, can we back up a little bit? Because you mentioned an evangelical cult. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah.
What was it? And what was the, like, I want to hear more about kind of the religion you were raised in and how that shaped who you are and who you became and stuff.
I grew up a little bit all over, but like for a significant part of my younger childhood was in like a rural Virginia area outside of like Blacksburg area. And there was a cult, you know, obviously they don't call themselves a cult. They don't brand themselves that way, but that is what it was. It was based around a church, very small and called Day Spring. And it has since imploded. You know, those kinds of settings do implode a lot because you get like narcissistic leadership and they'll fight and then like, you know, people go separate ways. So when that cult imploded, we moved to Southern Maryland and we joined like a mega church, which in and of itself was a different
kind of cult.
Different type of cult. And it was a covenant church.
When you left the first cult, as you say, did your family recognize it as a cult or is this just you?
So I don't think any of us at the time recognized it as a cult. My dad wouldn't call it that. My mom does call it that now. And she has only ever admitted to that this year. So yeah, when she found out I was writing a book about religious trauma and my experience in that cult and everything like that, she sent me a care package of several other books, that, including one that another member of the same cult wrote. And she was like, oh, yeah, look, remember this person who also wrote a book about our cult? And I was like, you're calling it a cult? It's been 35
wow.
years.
Wow.
Finally telling me.
Oh, my God.
So that was weird.
Okay.
But the younger one, that cult was very, like, very conservative. Like, as born female, I wasn't allowed to wear pants. I wasn't allowed to cut my hair. Wasn't allowed to, like, be outside the home. We were all homeschooled. Like, no, I didn't have a TV till I was in way into my teens. Like, I didn't have access to widestream media. I didn't know what Britney Spears was. I didn't get to like have any of the pop culture that like my age normally have. Like I'm still very behind. People will talk about a movie or something from the 2000s or 90s. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know. It wasn't on the approved list that we were allowed to watch. So
you were very isolated.
Very isolated. It's also the first time I heard that I was a lesbian. There was a big fight between my father and the leader at the time. And I remember hearing the leader scream at my dad, like, Sarah was my given name at the time, is going to be a lesbian because you're not like strong enough as a man of faith. And so she's going to be a lesbian. And I was like, oh no, what is that? That sounds so scary.
Oh, geez. Oh, wow. Wow. That's traumatic.
It was, but it's also kind of validating that like back then I was showing some, like, clearly the signs were there.
Clearly. And they just had to blame it on someone or something. Wow. Okay. That's intense. That is deep. Yeah. So you two got married and you're one of the few people I have talked to who actually like made their family by baby dancing, which is what I like to call it. You know, like,
yeah,
that's fun for us queers. But, you know, it seems like it was filled with lots of strife and trauma. So you two got married to kind of appease your family and then take us down the road.
COVID hit and I gave birth May 2020. So really, like, very isolated time. So we got married December 20th. I had the 20-week ultrasound December 18th. And that's like the big anatomy one where they do like check everything. All our family was in town for the wedding. You know, our tiny little wedding. It's like 20 of us. But they were all at the ultrasound appointment. This was still pre-COVID. So everyone was allowed to be there. And the doctor kicked everyone out. It was like, I just need to talk to the mom and dad.
Oh, God.
The baby was really sick. and that there was a lot of birth defects that had happened in her kidneys and bladder. And like, we didn't know if we'd make it to full term. So that was really, really rough. And
oh, God.
So from 20 to 40 weeks or 39 weeks when I gave birth, you know, I was at the doctor twice a week and just we were watching and the progress. So that was really difficult, especially like during COVID times, because I had to do that like alone. And, you know, he wasn't allowed to be at the appointments after COVID hit.
Right.
And oh, then the birth happened and, you know, she had a lot of breathing issues. So we were in NICU for a while. And then when she was 4 weeks old, she had to have surgery for her kidneys. And so that was also really like awful because it was like an 8-hour surgery at Children's National here. And like, because of COVID, Trevor, that's her father's name, he had to sit in the parking lot and wait. Like, he wasn't allowed to be in there, right? So he's like sitting in the parking lot. I'm sitting in the like family room. They only allowed both parents to be in there if like you were saying goodbye to the child. That was it. That was the COVID rules.
Oh my God.
Luckily, we weren't there at that point yet. And so she was born with 4 kidneys and 4 ureters that attached it to her bladder. And then there were blockages called these ureteroceles that are like a bubble that blocks the kidney from like draining into the bladder correctly. Then the ureters were also like kinked. This UPJ obstruction is what it was called, where it like looks like a J and so it wasn't like able to filter correctly. So she had to have like 2 kidneys removed because they were like hurting her, and then trying the ureter and take out the blockages. It was a really big surgery.
Oh my God.
4-week old.
Oh
yeah. So
awful.
It was awful. She would end up in her first year of life, she had 9 surgeries total.
Oh my God.
Like, we went home, you know, a week or so after, and then she threw a blood clot. We didn't know at the time what was happening. And then it led to like sepsis immediately. And she like actually coded and passed away. And that's when they called both of us in. Like, it was like 3 a.m. and I couldn't understand like why she was so fussy. I was trying to like make everything better. And finally, like, you know, her lips started turning blue and I was like, oh, I'll go to the ER. So I rushed her in. Again, Trevor wasn't allowed to come. So he was sitting in the parking lot. And the moment I walked into the ER, the nurse like looked down at her for just a second and then grabbed her from me and ran. And
oh,
I was like,
God.
I don't know what's happening here. It was awful.
Oh my God.
Then they called, you know, I had Trevor on speakerphone so he could hear, and they were like paddling her and all these things. And then she was in a coma for a while. They did a medically induced coma for a while so that her brain and stuff could heal. But she had thrown like a clot to one of the kidneys. And so that kidney died. And so currently she only has half a kidney left. Basically, throughout that year, we just kept trying to save the kidneys and things like that and bring them back. And we just couldn't do it. She had like a nephrostomy bag outside of her body for a long time that would like go in her side and the kidney would drain into it instead of her bladder. But it was a really intense year.
I was not expecting any of this. You just really like, oh my God, you poor thing. All of you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
That, I mean, my son was hospitalized as a baby 2 times and that was a nightmare. So that was nothing like, yeah. Like, you know, oh my God. Oh my God. Take some breaths. Like,
yeah,
whew.
It was pretty rough. Like, I think we just kind of like powered through it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also where we really like tested the dynamics of like what Trevor and my relationship was, because we were ships in the night for a year, basically. Like we couldn't be in the same room because I was also breastfeeding. So I was there more often.
Yeah.
And he was only able to come in like occasionally and, you know, in between while I was out sitting in the car waiting, like, cause we couldn't both be there at the same time with all the COVID rules, which was wild. It's also when I said, like, as I said, my family, all the things we did to try to appease them, like none of them really showed up or helped with that. And actually, like, we had a GoFundMe at one point, and like that my sister was running for us, and she like did some super shady stuff about it. And so like that relationship with my family like never proceeded forward after. I don't know, when you get like push comes to shove and you're like, oh, life is really hard, and like then the people who tell you that they're always going to be there for you don't, and actively hurt you instead. I mostly have like disconnected from them since then. And then when I outwardly came out as like, no, I'm going to be dating women, I'm going to be out, my family disconnected from me, but they are praying for me. So
they're praying for your soul.
Yeah. But thanks. The phrase that my dad likes the most is that, you know, he loves the sinner, he just hates the sin.
Oh, right. I've been told that before as well. And I didn't even come from religion, but people love to comment on my posts, that kind of a sentiment all the time. So fun.
Drives me crazy.
Oh, God. Whoa. I feel like we all just need a communal breath right now.
Sorry.
That was a lot. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast.
If you listen to this here show, chances are you might need a little help in the baby making department, because you've got a little too much of one thing and not enough of the other, if you know what I'm saying. But I have a promo code for you to help you, so you don't have to break the bank completely to make that family of yours. California Cryobank is a wonderful sperm bank, been around for over 45 years, and does their part to help the L'Igipetiqua community build our beautiful families. You're going to use code QUEERFAM25, which is going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog, so you can go start looking at donors right now. It will also give you a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. And the more information we can have, the better. They have a very wide and diverse selection of donors, and I use them, and many people I know use California Cryo to build their families, and I am so happy that they are sponsoring this here episode and that they are giving us this wonderful, wonderful gift of helping to create more families. Just go to cryobank.com, use code QUEERFAM25, and you're going to get that free level 2 subscription. Do it now, make those babies, and then come tell me about them. Okay.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Love is love.
You made it through that deep trauma. She's stable. She's okay. She has half of a kidney, but is 5 years old and okay. Yeah. Okay.
She's well, that's good. Like, she's had a few more surgeries since then. She has, you know, done really well, and she's stable. Like, at some point potentially in her life, she'll need a transplant. But, you know, theoretically, if we could push that off 30, 40 years, fantastic, right? So, like, right now we're just maintaining and focusing on that. She just started kindergarten 2 weeks ago.
Congrats. How's she doing?
It's an emotional adjustment for her, for sure. She has a lot of anxiety from, like, her medical trauma that I think is just a part of her now. And so we've definitely, she loves it, but her anxiety shows up very physically for her. So we've just been really working with her on that.
Sending all the good vibes.
Yeah.
Your family's way. But sometime during the last 5 years, you've had another child too, right?
Her younger sister is 2.5 now. So when the oldest was 2.5, we had the second.
And that was intentional, or was that?
Yeah. I really like wanted them to have each other. I didn't want Nora to be alone. And I really wanted both of us. We really wanted siblings. We don't want more than that. Like that's is just that. But the plan had always been to have two.
Okay. Amazing. Congrats. And when did your new modern chosen kind of family like come about? How did it come about? And when did you decide I'm going to date women and all the things?
I mean, I think it was a gradual change, right? Like that whole first year of, you know, quote unquote marriage, we were so isolated from each other that it really like became very clear that we weren't like romantically in the same boat or that we were different places. And I think we kept trying to like pretend that facade for a little bit after that. And honestly, more of that was on my part of like, I really didn't want to disappoint my family. Like, honestly, that was a big motivator for me of like, I just can't like, you know, do this to my family's going to think I'm terrible. They're going to think I'm the worst, right? It was a lot of like stuff I had to unpack on my own around that, particularly around like the religious aspect of things, of what would that look like, of also like, oh, what does it mean if my kids have like divorced parents, like hurt my kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of like shame feelings and like force it to work for the sake of outsiders. And as I was as a therapist or in training at the time, or just finishing up my residency, I think right around then, I took my last final 2 days before I gave birth to my oldest. So
wow.
Then I completed my residency during those first like 2 years while she was a baby, which was very hard to like balance. But thankfully telehealth came about with COVID and stuff and allowed me to do a lot from home.
Oh, that's good.
So that was really nice. And I was beginning to work a lot more with queer folks and really starting to explore more of that for myself. So we opened up our marriage.
How did that go? Like, what was that like?
I mean, fun.
Good. Okay, that's great. And it was like mutual.
It was mutual. We both had different things that we wanted and needed. And, you know, so like I'll only speak for my part of things, but like I wanted to date women and be with women. And I wanted to explore that side of myself more. I had dated women in a closeted way before ever meeting him. But it was the type of thing where I was like, well, best friends just do this. Like, we're just.
Yeah. I mean, don't they all? Don't they? Yeah. I'm just kidding.
I'd had several of those like best friends where we're like clearly a lot more than best friends and the feelings are a lot more. But I was like, no, this is just, we're just friends.
Who like to kiss sometimes.
Exactly. So it was really like exciting to be able to just kind of go out and explore that for myself. And the goal had been to always just kind of leave it open. And I just think, I guess I wouldn't even call it negative side of opening the relationship is it just made us realize we both didn't want this relationship in this way.
Right.
And that I wanted to be in like more significant relationships with women. Not that you can't, like there are, I work with plenty of poly people and like, I get that, but it's not, I'm actually like, I did try to explore the polyamorous side of things. I found that my orientation leans very romantically monogamous. I like, I've written 30 romance novels. It's like,
oh wow,
my being. Monogamy is like core to my being.
Yeah. So
it wasn't something that was like making me happy. It was fun and I enjoyed it, but like I really wanted to have a monogamous relationship.
Yeah. I'm similar in that. I've just leaned towards monogamy. I'm just like, I call myself a serial monogamist. It's just what I do.
I made a solid effort though to
Yeah, good. Okay, good on you. Good on you.
Yeah.
Okay, so you decided I'm going to explore this and where are we at? Like what happened?
So then like as it was becoming more and more apparent to both of us that this dynamic wasn't going to work, I was really thinking about the kids at that point and I didn't want like statistically, you know, as a therapist, I'm always thinking with my therapist brain even when I shouldn't be. And I'm like, okay, kids do a lot better with change like on, you know, before grade school starts. Like if we can establish this change like when they're really young, it'll do a lot better than them having like a rupture later on, which, you know, isn't necessarily true for all families, but that's what I was like really worried about. And so I was like, you know, we need to do this sooner rather than later instead of trying to force this for longer and then make the kids go through this in elementary school or middle school or whatever. And so my oldest was 3 and a half mm-hmm. when we like separated officially, but like it looks very much the same. Like we were living together in a large apartment And then we moved into two separate, like a house and an apartment one block away. We're like one block away from each other. And he's at my place every day. Like he, you know, has a key. Like he's currently staying with me because both of us broke our leg.
Oh, God.
That's a wild coincidence. I broke my ankle like and had surgery on it a month ago, so I can't walk yet. And then he broke his leg this week.
So he's staying with you so you can help each other out.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
So I know that's really hard chasing. The kids have just realized we can't chase them. Like if I tell her to go time out, she realized I can't put her in it anymore. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, dear. Yeah. You're going to have to figure out a workaround there because you give them an inch. Get ready.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. It's very interesting. But so, yeah, so we see each other every day and our lives are really like intermingled in those ways and co-parent half-half or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like a little more give or take depending on what either of us got going on work-wise and stuff like that. But the kids, I only recently realized that my oldest doesn't actually even remember us together. I mean, she's five now, so it's been 2 years, which I guess is a pretty significant amount of time if you're only five.
Yeah.
And I had kind of forgotten that she didn't remember us like together, but she had never seen us like physically affectionate beforehand because we just, you know, I like women. So now, you know, I've just realized this because I have a partner now, and this is the first time that my oldest has seen physical affection and like in a romantic sense. And it's been very new for her of like, what does that mean? Like, why are you kissing them? And like, well, do you still love me? Like, like all of those questions that they ask bring in like a new partner for the first time. So that has been an interesting like thing to navigate, like introducing that person to them.
Do you find it harder to just like, you know, everybody gets hung up on the queer part of it, the queer part of like you're bringing, I don't know how they identify, but you say you like women. So you're bringing somebody who's queer into the family. Which one is harder, like just bringing someone in and you being affectionate with anyone or, you know, because people get hung up on this whole.
The queer part. Yeah.
Yes.
I definitely think the queer part has nothing to do with it, frankly. Like the kids.
They don't care.
Yeah. They don't care at all.
Exactly.
So when I met my partner, they identified as female and have since started transitioning to male. That has also been a conversation with the kids as they're.
Yeah.
But they also are like totally fine with that. Like,
right.
they're just more like curious of like, what does that mean? And that's mm-hmm. about
it. But right.
They don't care.
And how about for you? How is that for you? Because you really just went through a whole journey to get to the place where you're like dating women, right? Still the same exact person, right? This is still the same person that you like or love or whatever. But they're transitioning to a gender that you decided you weren't going to date anymore. So how does that feel?
I think I'm still figuring that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm transparent with them about that as well. Like we talk about that a lot. I'm obviously like the biggest supporter of that, like them being their who they want to be and super supportive of that. And mm-hmm. I don't have any current issues with it. Like I have some fear, obviously, mm-hmm. of like, okay, well, 2 years down the line into this, what will things be like? And what will top surgery be like? And will I be okay with it afterwards and stuff like that? I don't know all the answers to that. I think I'm in a lucky spot that ironically, like one of the things I specialize in as a couples therapist is when somebody transitions in a marriage, like genders from when they first met. So I've also worked with at this point, like dozens and dozens of couples in which that has happened either one way or the other. And so I don't feel like as jarred by it. But it's still like different to experience it, you know, myself. And there is a part of me that's like, man, I did a lot of work to date women. And
see, I would not normally even ask that question, but we just really did go through an entire journey to get to this and a pretty tumultuous one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've said exactly that before.
Yeah. So it's just interesting. But it's beautiful. I just recently talked to a man who's also an author, actually, it was a previous episode this season, actually. He had given birth to, they have four kids. He had given birth to all four of them. And then when they were a little bit older, he transitioned, but he always knew he was trans, but he wanted to give birth. He wanted to do the thing. But anyway, when the kids' perspectives were so interesting because their questions were like, will we still have butter? Like their whole, because like their whole world was just rocked by like, wait, so you're not going to be my mom anymore. So does that mean we still eat cookies? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause everything changes and yet nothing changes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, getting a child's perspective of it really like distilled it down to just it at its core, what it is, how simple it is, and also how complicated we make it. Right. And the answers that he had for his kids were like, I'm still me. No, I'm still going to take you to school. No, yeah. I'm still the one who's going to bake the cookies.
Yeah.
Nothing's changing. You're just not going to call me mom anymore. You know, the certain things, physicalities are going to change, but it's me. I'm still inside and I'm still going to do all the things I did before.
I think the first question my oldest had when I talked to her about it was like, well, I can still be a girl. Right. And I was like,
right.
Yeah, of course. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was literally it. And then she's like, okay.
Cool. As long as it doesn't affect, you know, it's funny. Kids just get it and they figure it out and they help us see so many truths that we just tend to complicate things and it doesn't have to be as complicated. I found Jesse was his name, what he had to say about it and what his kids' takeaways. I found it just so eye-opening and like simple and beautiful.
I think they've had a harder time trying to understand the difference between friend and partner because I am a very social person and I have friends around all the time. Like they have other adult queer friends around all the time. Like they're used to drag queens in our home all the time. They're used to like all of my friends are like lesbians or things like that. And so they're extremely used to that, like adult friendships around all the time. And also, like, I don't know how you are with your friends, but my friends and especially my like queer friends were physically affectionate, like hugs and stuff. And so I think this is the first time now they're seeing me like romantically kiss somebody or somebody or something like that. And that transition in their mind of like, what does that mean? Has been more, I think, confusing for them because they don't also see it like elsewhere. It's not like their friends' parents.
That affectionate, right? Because I'm trying to think in my head how often I kiss my wife in front of my kids. I don't know if we do it all that often because day-to-day life, right?
Yeah. So that's been more of the big thing. I mean, they'll see it in like movies or whatever, usually around the concept of like a wedding in like Disney movies and stuff has been, you know, my oldest keeps asking like, well, when are you going to have a wedding? When are you going to get married? I'm like, okay, slow down.
Take it easy. Yeah. Did that once. I already did that. Slow down, mom.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really good point. Like, it's the fact that my parent is being romantically involved is more jarring than the fact than who the gender of the person they are romantically involved with. That's a big takeaway, right?
If they don't care who it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how is your family doing? Like, do you talk to them at all now?
I do not have any contact with them. Like, I'll occasionally, like I said, my mom will send a package here and there. My mom left when I was really young. So like when the first split happened and we left that church, is also like when she left, you know, just for good. Like, she didn't want kids. And, you know, she was married at 21 years old, met my dad at a Christian evangelical hotline, she never wanted kids. I actually think my mom is probably like really autistic.
Oh.
She never wanted children. She doesn't like physical touch. She doesn't like people or like being around people. But she was like, I'm going to be a good Christian wife. I'm going to do the things. And when the cult split up, I think she saw it as permission to be like, nope, I'm out. I never wanted this to begin with. And she moved to like a small trailer in the middle of nowhere in Virginia. And like, we've barely seen her since. My youngest sibling was 4 months old when she left, and she's barely ever met my mom.
Oh, wow. How many of you were there? Are there?
4.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she'll send me packages occasionally in her way, and they're a swing and a miss usually, and often emotionally upsetting. But I think she like doesn't fully get it or is like trying in her way, and it's just not for me. My dad remarried and joined MAGA.
MAGA? and MAGA, a mega church and MAGA.
Yeah, he actually moved to Florida to be around more like-minded people.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh no, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So we don't have much contact, if any, because it's like.
But do your siblings, is he still?
My siblings and I, we don't have any contact either. And some of them are in contact with each other and some are estranged from each other. Frankly, like we all just went through some really horrible things and a lot of them chose not to pursue therapy or things like that and are continuing to struggle. And then others are just have just disconnected and don't want anything to do with the family. And I don't blame them. And like the last version of me that they know is like 12, 13 year old version of me, who is a really angry, rebellious child that didn't want to be where I was and was really miserable. And that's the only image that they have of me and is how they continue to view me today. And so I've tried to repair those relationships of like, hey, like, can you forgive my 12 year old self? But they've chosen not to do that. So kind of like left those behind. But, you know, if they were to ever reach out and truly like authentically want a real relationship with who I am today at 35, I'd happily speak with them.
Well, and now you have your chosen family and you have your kids and your co-parent. And, you know, a lot of times that's better than the original anyway. So,
I mean, I think so for sure. Like we're, you know, I mean, Trevor, like he's more involved in he's like the dad that they see at the school. Like, right. The teachers don't even see some of the other dads.
No, of course not.
He's a room parent with me. And somebody said when we were signed up to your room parents, they were like, it's going to be both of you. Like, he's going to do it with you. I was like, yeah, why wouldn't he? And they're like, oh, just the dads don't normally do it. I'm like,
they don't. You're right.
He's very involved. Like the kids are his number one priority. And he and I are really good friends. He's friends with my partner. We all like do stuff together all the time. And
it's a queer modern family. I love it. Get it. And I want to change what I said about the dads being the room parents. The gay dads do it.
Yeah.
The queer dads do.
Yes, they do. That's yeah. What I'm saying. He's more involved. Like as a queer dad, he's more involved.
Right. There you go. We're better. Just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said you wrote a book. So this book, and you have a bunch of romance novels. Let's dig in. Let's hear. Are they queer?
Some of them are. I started writing and publishing in 2013. Just a couple days ago was my 12-year anniversary. Of my first publishing, my first book. And so I was writing cishet romance back then because that's the only thing I knew existed. You know, there was another option. And so you can kind of see over the course of the 12 years that it gets like queer.
Oh, fun.
And then the most recent like few ones are all like lesbian romance. So yeah, that's
fun. I need to read one of those.
My favorite is actually about queer family. It's called Baby Bank. And it's a 35-year-old woman who wants to get pregnant on her own and have a family by herself and goes through the process to find a sperm donor and all that, and then falls in love with the sperm donor's sister.
Oh, that's fun. That's a fun little twist. I wonder if I can find somebody who that actually happened to and interview them. That would be amazing.
Probably.
Anybody out there? Anybody? Okay, cool. And tell us about your newest book.
So this will be my first nonfiction book. I'm very excited. It's a healing guide to anyone who's experienced religious or spiritual trauma. You know, as a therapist, I currently in the Arlington, Washington, D.C. area, I own a practice of all queer and trans therapists. And so everyone on staff identifies that way. And we mostly work with that population and their families. It's obviously really busy right now in the D.C. area with that. And so we've got a lot going on. And one of the things I specialize in is helping people heal from religious trauma. And unfortunately, there's just a really large overlap with the queer community and that. And so I actually wrote this book like 5 years ago, the first draft of it. It's had iterations since then, but it took me 4 years to get a publisher to buy it. I got so many rejections telling me religious trauma wasn't a thing. And that it wasn't a thing. And frankly, it is like even it's only been more mainstream as a term in the last like 5 years. We didn't even have the term at all before 2011, but it's still not even in like the diagnostic manual or anything like that.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So we're still really far behind on all of that.
Yeah.
But finally, Bloomsbury was like, okay, we'll buy it.
And so, yeah, it's coming out next spring. It's called Healing Sacred Wounds. And, you know, I'm really excited for when it does come out and hope it really helps a lot of people. I also do a lot of like training and group work specifically around religious trauma. I run a group to help people kind of heal from religious trauma. I really love group therapy for those who haven't done it. I think like what is hurt in groups can be healed in groups, and your first group is your family. And so group therapy is a really unique way of being able to, especially in a communal type of trauma, like which religion tends to be, group therapy is a really cool way to heal it in a safer, gentler way that utilizes the same like communal aspect in the healing. Because one of the biggest things people say when trying to untangle religion or possibly leave religion or whatever they want to do about it is like, well, that's my whole community. Everyone I know is at that church. Like, what, I won't have anybody kind of thing. So
right.
I really like helping people, you know, find chosen family and find community and what that looks like, no matter what they believe. And I'm not anti-religion. A lot of people think that if I'm a religious trauma specialist, I must hate religion. And I don't. Like, I just hate trauma. That's right. It. Don't traumatize people and we don't have a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So are you only local or are you virtual as well? Like if somebody's listening and they're like, I need some help with my religious trauma.
We are virtual. It depends on the state and kind of exactly how that would go, but usually we can accommodate most people. Our company is LGBT Plus Counseling Collaborative, or the website is lgbtcounselingdmv.com. So anyone is able to reach out there as well. And I do a lot of work on Instagram and like posting content and working with different queer content. So anyone can follow me at SC Neely, NEALY. And that's where I'd post like a lot of resources too for religious trauma. And there are some really great ones. We're getting more and more in the area, thankfully.
That's great. That's awesome. And all of this will be in the show notes as well. And when does your book come, the newest book come out?
Sometime spring 2026.
Okay. So, all right. So it's on the horizon.
Yes.
So be on the lookout.
Yeah.
Be on the lookout. Well, this has been great. And I like wish you all the best with the partner that you're currently dating.
Thank you.
And with the family and with the kiddos and all the things. You're busy. You're a busy person.
Yeah, I prefer that.
Yeah, me too. Well, thank you so much, Essie. This has been really great. You.
Thanks for having me.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.